Today, we'll be discussing the manuscript The Acute and Chronic Effects of Hot Water Immersion on Inflammation and Metabolism in Sedentary Overweight Adults from the laboratory of Dr. Christoph Licht. We have Dr. Licht representing the authors and Dr. Oliver Gibson, who is an expert in the field. My name is Simon Schenk, and I'm the associate editor that handled the review process. I will be moderating today's discussion. Dr. Licht, please provide us with a brief overview of the rationale and aims for the study, how you tested the hypothesis, and the primary findings from your study.
This study used an intervention of passively increasing body temperature in sedentary overweight adults. The design of this study is partly grounded in exercise studies that looked at the importance of temperature in the acute inflammatory response. And there is probably important to mention that the acute inflammatory response is thought to be important in chronic disease related to inflammation, examples being diabetes or cardiovascular disease. Part of my background is in spinal cord injury, exercise and spinal cord injury, health interventions in disabled populations. So populations that may not have access to sport or may, for one reason or another, not be able to do enough exercise. So I thought, well, if some of the effects of exercise, so an inflammatory response, can also be found when we passively increase temperature, then maybe that could be used for therapeutic purposes. So the aim of the study was to investigate the acute change in inflammatory markers in response to passive heat stress. It was a 60-minute session of hot water immersion. But then the other arm of the study was interested in looking at the chronic effects of hot water therapy. That was a 2-week duration, 10 sessions of hot water immersion. And then we just looked at the pre-post those 2 weeks, or what had changed. There was a hypothesis for the acute arm. So basically, we expected similar things to happen as we'd find following exercise. So we expected to find increases in plasma IL-6 as an inflammatory marker. We expected increases in monocyte intracellular heterotrophin 72 and also extracellular heterotrophin 72. And for the chronic arm of the experiment, we hypothesized to find an increase in resting intracellular heterotrophin 72, a reduction in resting extracellular heterotrophin 72, and also a reduction in resting IL-6. So we immersed people in hot water at 39 degrees. For the American listeners, that's 102 degrees Fahrenheit. They were immersed up to the neck, and body temperature was controlled. We took blood samples before they entered the water, right after the 60 minutes of being immersed, and then also 2 hours post. And there was a control condition where we took the same measures, but people were just resting on a chair outside the water. And the temperature of that room air was controlled at 27 degrees, which is 81 degrees Fahrenheit. Then for the chronic part of the studies, it was 10 visits, so spread over 2 weeks. So in the first week, there was 5 visits of 45 minutes. And in the second week, there was 5 visits of 60 minutes. For the chronic part of the study, we were mainly interested in the changes in resting measures. We did find those acute increases in IL-6. However, we didn't find any acute changes in heterotrophin, and we didn't find that intracellularly. We looked at the heterotrophin in monocytes, so there was no change there, and there was also no change in the plasma concentration of heterotrophin 72. For the chronic arm of the experiment, we found a decrease in the extracellular heterotrophin 72, so that went according to our hypothesis, and we also found decreases in glucose concentration and insulin concentrations. These were additional measures we took to investigate glycemic control.
Thank you, Dr. Licht. Dr. Gibson, as an expert in this field, what is your perspective on this paper?
Congratulations to Dr. Licht on a really important and impactful paper. It certainly contributes to our field of heat or thermal therapy and provides us with some new understanding as to the roles in different populations. The highlights of the study for me is our understanding of the importance of elevated temperature in improving glucose regulation, and that characterized by reductions in glucose and insulin concentrations, and also an improved physiological profile, specifically the cardiovascular adaptations, which from the chronic arm of the study, Dr. Licht observed decreases in systolic and diastolic blood pressure. Certainly central to the importance of this paper are observations that these adaptations are occurring in a relevant target population. So the participants in the study were sedentary overweight individuals who are in need of these adaptations, and also a highlight for me is the fact that the intervention used is both experimentally robust and also ecologically valid, which gives an applied finding to implement in the real world.
Thank you, Dr. Gibson, for these insightful comments. Dr. Leicht, do you have anything to add to Dr. Gibson's comments?
You mentioned the ecological validity. We chose to have a control condition which included people being sat at room temperature, so outside the water. And you could criticize that, because if someone is more interested in mechanistic questions, you could say, well, yes, there is temperature effects of water immersion, but there may also be other effects, such as the hydrostatic pressure, which will be different in the water. We don't quite know whether that has an effect on any of the outcome measures, but we chose this more ecologically valid approach to say, all right, we want to test a condition that could be used as therapy. So people would either sit in hot water, or if they don't do the therapy, they wouldn't sit in thermoneutral water. They would sit on a chair in the living room. This is a reason why we chose that approach.
Dr. Leicht, please comment on the duration of immersion and temperature of immersion that was used and its clinical implications.
The duration we chose was 60 minutes, and people were immersed in water which was 2 degrees higher than body core temperature, and that is long. People felt fine in the first 15 minutes of the intervention. They actually enjoyed it. And then between 15 and 45 minutes, they were okay with it. And for most of the participants, the last 15 minutes were a struggle because it's really hot. It's not like a bath pub where you have a soak and the water temperature will come down slowly. We kept topping up the water to have this 2 degree elevation of resting core temperature. So we chose quite an extreme approach. So the thermal load was considerable. Having said that, I think it is really an aim for future studies to further decrease those immersion times. And there are some studies out there, not using the same outcome measures, but there are some studies out there that looked at immersion times of 20 minutes, 3 times a week, 10 minutes daily over 2 weeks. And those studies, they also find some positive effects, either associated with glycemic control or also associated with inflammation. If we know that factors like heat shock protein need a minimum immersion time to be induced, but at the same time, we see that studies find improvements in inflammation and glycemic control with immersion times much lower than that, then maybe not everything hinges around heat shock protein.
Dr. Gibson, would you like to comment?
Yes, I think what's emerging actually in the general area of passive heating is, rather than all passive heating studies being similar and with the same targets and with the same desired responses, I think what's perhaps starting to emerge is an idea that something like hot water immersion may be an effective way of inducing whole body or systemic responses. And with that comes challenges relating to the application and probably adherence to the intervention. We have a slightly different application here. And some of the work we're looking at is looking at more localized heating. And the benefits of localized heating outside of any sort of adaptation is that you can sustain the heat stimulus for far longer, and then concurrent changes in blood flow and temperature responses and any cellular or molecular responses that follow can be magnitude to a greater extent. It's certainly challenging to recruit people to even non-exercise training studies. And I think what we have with heat therapy is a training study of sorts. Certainly for those who are inactive, we can probably divide those into people who are unwilling and unable. For those who are unwilling, a short chronic intervention, which can be managed within the daily routine, is likely to have the greatest efficacy. Perhaps there's then another cohort who are unable to exercise. And for those individuals, the duration of the thermal stimulus has the potential to be far greater. For those who are unwilling to exercise, the heat therapy might be a short-term intervention that allows them to then commence some exercise and the benefits there. For those who are unable, such as those with very severe vascular diseases or spinal cord injured individuals, then for those individuals, that might be a more appropriate chronic long-term solution for them.
Dr. Leicht, would you like to comment on what Dr. Gibson was just mentioning?
I do like Dr. Gibson's approach using the localized heating as a potential therapy tool. It's also something that we're exploring from approaching the same problem from the different sides. So I'm still interested in water therapy, just also because it's been around for so long. It wasn't our generation that came up with this. The Romans, they had all their thermal baths. So it is a health intervention that's been around for thousands of years. I am still interested in pursuing this, but making the interventions more enjoyable is something that we're studying now. And what we do is to try to either split the intervention up into smaller parts. So does it need to be 60 minutes or could it be four sets of 15 minutes? That could be one approach that make it more enjoyable. We find this in sauna bathing, for example, where typically you would have three bouts of 50 minutes in the sauna interspersed by 15-minute breaks. And so this could be one approach. Localized cooling could be another approach. So rather than localized heating, as Dr. Gibson suggests, we could cool people. We could give them some ice to cool their foreheads or whatever part is sticking out of the water to make it more enjoyable to get that feedback from the skin. So whatever it is, wherever we come from, I think if we want this temperature approach to be used in clinical settings, in therapy, in health interventions, we need to find approaches that also work from a perception perspective. People must like it or must like it to some extent, or at least must not absolutely dislike it. Because if that was the case, it's like exercise. Somebody who doesn't like to exercise and you tell them, go and exercise, and it's healthy for you, they'll do it for a couple of weeks maybe, but then if they don't enjoy it, they'll stop very quickly.
Dr. Gibson, are there areas that you see the field going based on this work?
Yes, absolutely. I think this is an exciting time as we've now got the opportunity to implement a full spectrum of research questions that range from mechanistic understandings of both the physiological and the cellular or molecular responses, right up to the very simple questions relating to the application of this intervention. We have the FIT acronym, where we consider the frequency and the intensity, the time and the type of exercise training studies. And I think we've got the opportunity to explore a whole paradigm of thermal therapy applications in line with this. And of course, the frequency, Dr. Likes alluded to, whether we want a single session per day, or maybe that could be punctuated by breaks. The intensity or the temperature, whether that's a whole body temperature or a localized temperature response, can be manipulated. The duration may be important, and particularly if we're looking for whole body adaptations, then managing them and balancing the palatability and the adherence to becoming uncomfortable in hot water versus perhaps in another group being heated locally, perhaps just of the legs, might improve those metrics. And of course, we touched briefly on the type, and hot water immersion has rightly been the focus of this study, but we know that there are saunas and steam rooms which can elicit this thermal stimulus, as well as simple heated blankets which could be used perhaps in individuals who are less active to elicit the stimulus that we want to improve their cardiometabolic profile.
This concludes our conversation on the acute and chronic effects of hot water immersion on inflammation and metabolism in sedentary overweight adults, published in the Journal of Applied Physiology.